Welcome to Paint Ed. Hey, I'm Chris Shank, the education guy at the Painting Contractors Association. PCA provides painting contractors with the training and connections they need to grow their business. To find out more, visit pcapainted.org. If you've never met a keyboard enthusiast, you're in for a treat. On this episode of Paint Ed, Jason Paris of Paris Painting in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares with us his love for a very small niche of the technology world, computer keyboards. And while we geek out over keyboards for approximately 6 minutes and 37.4 seconds, there is a strong analogy here to the business world. Because you see, business and technology progress in much the same way when it comes to innovation. The many iterations of progress we see are very specific to their time, environment, and social atmosphere. In other words, there's a reason the old-style QWERTY keyboard arrangement was good for its time. But now, like a lot of things, people have forgotten why it started and they continue with it. Not because it's still the best way, but because it's convenient and everyone's doing it. So how do we know which things in business are outmoded? And maybe more importantly, how do we know when it will be profitable to innovate? Jason asks the big questions and even gets started on some of the answers. And of course, Jason's going to be on panel discussions and leading BrainMeld table discussions at PCA Expo in Glendale, Arizona, February 19th through the 21st, 2020. Come on, you know you need to be there. Register for the expo at pcapainted.org/expo. Hey, Jason, welcome to Paint Ed.
Thanks for having me on.
So, Jason, we got a few things to talk about today, and this is real serious business here. I've seen you recently at the Crank Conference, and actually you're on the board at PCA, board of directors of about 9, I think, directors on that board. And so I'm seeing you a little bit more often, and you're making some big decisions for PCA, right?
Yes. Yep. Big things happening.
The fate of all of us rests in your hands. No, but you guys, we have some pretty neat people there, great young, sharp leaders sitting on that board and that are really moving us forward. So we're really excited about that. So thank you for that. And you got a lot of things going on in your life. You actually have a PBN coming up.
Yeah. So PBN, Paint by Numbers.
Yeah.
It's a conference we're hosting in Minneapolis. At the time of the recording, it'll be next week. So the 12th and 13th of December. And it kind of genesis out of, we do annual training with our team each year. And I think we have a really unique team and a really cool team. And we've kind of been pushing the ethos of cooperation in the industry, specifically here locally. And the idea was, what if we just open the doors and let people come in and see our model, see how we train our people, run through the priorities we set with people, the goals we set, how we train them, the expectations we have. And I think we've done cool things in the industry in the past couple of years. And if that helps other people, then we'd be all for that.
So be it.
Yeah.
So you're demonstrating cooperation by doing this. I mean, you really are dissecting your business and laying it open for people to see how it works, what makes you guys run. And there's no fear there. I haven't seen in any of your presentations a fear that you're giving away the secret sauce. There's something that's unique about who you guys are and where you guys work that I think is not duplicatable possibly. But
I'd also say, yeah, it's an industry where if others do better, I do better as well, especially specifically locally. But then, if you kind of magnify the mindset of the consumer through other people's experiences, we'd all do better if we all do better.
Right.
So there's really not, so far there's been only upside. If I were in a different industry, I wouldn't have this mindset. But I'm a residential repaint contractor, and I prefer that my quote unquote competitors run better businesses and are more profitable and succeed and scale, all those positive things, give their clients better experiences. I think we'd all benefit from that kind of a market.
Right. Okay. And I've heard you explain that several times, and I'm more convinced every time you say it, but it's still a relatively new concept for a lot of people, including me. So I always love hearing you talk about it. I'm excited about seeing you at the expo coming up in February.
Dude, it's going to be awesome. Yeah. Expo. It's always kind of the premier event each year after, well, in tandem with Paint by Numbers. It's going to be an awesome deal. I look forward to it every year, and you guys never disappoint in putting that on.
Well, thank you. And we're excited to see you there. I think we're going to try to get you on a panel discussion and a brain meld table. So people will be able to talk to you and connect with you and hear from you. So we're going to talk today about keyboards.
Of course.
This would be a great time for you to start clicking that in the background.
Makes sense. Yep. So that's keyboard. Those are Cherry MX Blues.
Okay.
We've got Cherry MX Greens. These are the Khalil Gold switches. And what you're not noticing, because it's only audio, is that it has a tactile bump and click on the way down, as well as on the way up.
Mm.
It's got really kind of a popcorn feel to it.
So these are computer keyboards.
So those are, so the first one was my keyboard. The other ones are mechanical key switches that I have on a, I've gone through multiple iterations of keyboard switches, switched them out to get kind of the best feel. I will end up kind of at the Holy Grail, hopefully later this month, once my shipment from China comes in. The Holy Pandas, which I know you're a big fan of.
I am. Yeah, ever since I saw it on your shirt at the conference, and I said, what is the Holy Panda lock, right?
Yeah, key switch. So I have a shirt.
Holy Panda key switch.
Panda hugging a key switch. That is the Holy Panda. He's got a halo over his head. I'm a big fan of those. It's been hard to source them. I think I found a source in China that has some, and looking forward to get those in and never turning back.
Never turning back for a keyboard. Okay, this is so ridiculous for people who don't understand what is going on.
Let's tie it together.
Let's bring it back. Let me say real quick, we started this discussion a while back, and you're talking about business, and you started talking about keyboards, and it's really fascinating, actually. So I know people can't see what you're doing. It'd be really neat to have some visuals with it, but tell me how this whole thing started with you, and then we'll tie it to business.
Okay, so keyboards. I'm a big computer guy.
People
who know me know that I majored in economics and I minored in video games in my dorm room, basically, in college. And there's a lot of arguments that say the only reason I started a business is so I could have an R&D budget to build my computer and my sweet command center that I was able to build. But I got my first mechanical keyboard, must have been probably 4 years ago, and it was really fun to have that tactile feedback. Anyways, I spend most of my time in my command center. I don't have a fancy truck because I'm in the office all day. So this is kind of like my fancy truck. And keyboards are awesome. It's what I use. It's what I touch most of the day. It's where my hands are most of the day. That and previously the mouse. I now no longer have a mouse. I just use my keyboard.
No way.
Yeah.
How does that work? Seriously.
So I have different layers on the keyboard. So there's kind of layer buttons that you can either press or hold because all the keys are custom programmable. So on my left hand, I have a key that I press and it turns my right hand into a number pad. And on my right hand, I have a key that I press that'll turn kind of the WASD, fingers on the left hand, into the movement of the cursor. And then on the right hand, you can do left click, right click, with the pointer kind of ring finger, and then up and down scroll with the middle finger using the keys. So it's pretty sweet. It's kind of so I'm a big fan of Elon Musk. We all love Elon Musk, and his Neuralink is inspiring to a lot of people, but did get you start thinking about what is the purpose of a keyboard. And when we talk about innovation, we talk about iterations. It's kind of that willingness to be perplexed or confused about something very simple, right? And then thinking through what is the purpose of this thing, or this process, or this person, or this role, or this comp package. What is the purpose we're trying to achieve? And the way Mr. Elon puts it is your keyboard is basically the interface between your mind and the computer. And it's a very low bandwidth interface. It's based off of 10 fingers going into the computer. Sometimes voice commands can go in, and then coming out, it's either audio or visual. That basically is the limitation of the bandwidth. And now he's got his Neuralink project, where he's trying to hook the brain directly into many, 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 electrical interfaces.
Mm. Wow.
But it's that willingness to get the keyboard and say, what's the purpose? What is it for? Its interface. And
so you've done that at a very basic level, and you probably have lots of keyboards, right? I mean, we've heard the switches and stuff. Have you gone through a lot of keyboards?
So I started out with a DOS keyboard, mechanical switch, and so I just walked over to it. Those are Cherry MX Browns. I could never touch something like that again. It's disgusting to me. They're basically like mush keyboards, mush keys. But yeah, so I started with that one. And I've actually only gone through two, but I'm ready to move to my third now. The second one I got is completely split. So there's two separate halves of the keyboard that are not connected to each other except for through a wire. Then it's completely rotatable. It's got tenting legs on them, so you can supinate your hands a little bit so they're not so pronated and you're hunched over. It really spreads out your chest and opens up your kind of your arms a little bit, so you're not, again, not hunched over and rounding the shoulders. And then I went blank keycaps for a cool factor, and then did transparent keys on kind of the top row because there are LEDs behind them that I programmed to change with the layer switch I'm on. And then I got kind of rubberized keycap for those layer switches just so I know where they are.
Okay, so we're going to get some pictures. We're going to put some pictures out there on Facebook. So if anybody's listening to this, go to the PCA Facebook page, PCA National, and look at this. It's going to be the post with the podcast, and we'll put some pictures down in there. But yeah, because it's interesting to see all that. So you got into it. You've totally maybe kind of personalized this keyboard for yourself, the thing that works really good for you, and it's kind of built off of all these iterations that are out there, or like these
I'd say just getting started, because I'm ready to throw this one to I've been trying to give it away in the office because I want to get a Dactile Manuform keyboard which has a little bit more of a ramp curve, and then the thumbs come down at an angle and it just forms better to your hand.
Wow.
But anyways, why is this interesting? Why are we talking this on a painting podcast? I think it's a good example. Keyboards in general are a great example of what I am dubbing the system effect. And I thought it was a thing because I thought I heard it somewhere. I tried to Google it preparing for this podcast, and it started talking about the physics of fans or something like that. So I'm just going to make it a thing right now. Okay. And say that the system effect is where you are basically – something is so ingrained in the process of an organization, an industry, a society, that just running with it is highly productive as opposed to challenging it and changing it for your personal and individualized use, even if that individual may have greater output. So it really comes down to the individual wanting their own greater output, because the society itself is not going to disrupt the system that's serving, not necessarily well in the way that it's structured, but serving well because of the continuity and the people are all buying into it, and by everyone buying into it, it's a very strong system, regardless of its actual strengths.
Yeah, absolutely.
So keyboards are great. Yeah, keyboards are a great example of that. And keyboards have been around for a long time. The first ones looked like a spherical ball, but eventually you got to. There's been many iterations of keyboards, and then the history of them is a great PowerPoint presentation slideshow I started to put together, and I asked for the last event you and I met at, I asked the leader of that if I could present on keyboards, and he told me there's no way. But trust me, somebody will one day let me present on keyboards, and it'll be a great.
So what you did instead was presented on the history of Excel sheets.
Yeah, I think that was a little bit out of left field when he asked me to talk about Excel sheets.
You got him good. You got him good on that one.
Got him good. We talked about the history of it. We talked about IBM. About all those things. Okay.
So in business, though, and I think this is a good point, is some things become so culturally ingrained, kind of crystallized, to where it kind of costs so much to retool and to maybe not just innovate, but to revolutionize, that you're like, let's see how much, see how far this could carry us. And then when it comes to the point where that there's a crisis that develops because it's reached its end or its max or its ceiling, then how do we innovate again? But you have to have the forerunners of those future innovations to be able to say, hey, I've seen and I've experienced something that everybody else is kind of a little bit lagging behind on, and I could help take you there. And so those are kind of what your visionaries are doing. They may not be the most popular, the kind of the persecuted prophet, so to speak, but it helps that people are trying to figure out the best way to do it, not just this is the way we've always done it. Now, you were talking about the keyboard and how it was laid out just with the alphabet, because you got the QWERTY, right? Isn't that what they're called, QWERTY keyboards?
Man, so you could go so – there's so many things to the design of the keyboard. like initially it was even laid out like a piano. Like the staggeredness of the keyboard is bad for our fingers. If you look at your keyboard, they're staggered keycaps, mm-hmm. and it causes your fingers to do all these sorts of contortions, as opposed to like the one that I have is called an ortholinear. My fingers are straight, so the keys are in straight rows. Mm. But started out mimicking a piano, and I would say again, because of the system effect, right? Everybody knows what a piano is at that time. You've got these kind of staggered keys, and if you set up a keyboard like a piano, you know, you can have multiple rows. Like, okay, I get this. I get how that works. There were iterations of how the alphabet on it formed, but eventually landed on what's called the QWERTY model, which is if you take your left hand, put it on the top row, Q-W-E-R-T-Y, left to right, are the keys. And so that's why we call it the QWERTY model. And this is in my presentation. I won't give away all the secrets, but there's a strong argument, initial argument to be made that this was very, very well designed for the system and the environment that it was created in, specifically around typewriters jamming. And so this is an issue. If you have a typewriter, you press keys that are close by to each other in quick succession, and the chambers or the arms that punch the letters up ram into each other and get stuck. You have what's called a keyboard jam, or a typewriter jam.
Yeah.
Right. And so QWERTY is well designed for that. Unfortunately, it's poorly designed for our fingers because it causes you to go all over the place, right? All the letters are spread out, the common ones. But it does really help prevent typewriter jamming.
Interesting. Yeah. Which is so, that's just
a typewriter.
That's a great example of an antiquated system that we just get used to. Okay. Go ahead. I don't want to interrupt you, but I want to go ahead. Is there anything you want to say?
You did a great job of jumping in and emphasizing the point, right? It's an antiquated system we got used to. And again, it's really good if you have that issue. Now we find ourselves in 2019 with digital keyboards that have no mechanical parts to it, except for now the enthusiasts want mechanical switches, but there's no arms that are jamming, but we're still stuck with this QWERTY model because it's what we started with. And it's actually really bad for your fingers. It's very bad carpal tunnel. The Dvorak, there's many different types, but the Dvorak model is much more efficient and effective. You have about 80% of your keystrokes on the home row. You've got much less manipulation and twisting and twerking of your fingers all around the keyboard. But it's not universal.
So it's more ergonomic. It's more efficient. It's more kind of healthful.
So here's what it's good at. It's good at the ergonomics of your fingers. It would be bad if you had a typewriter and you're worried about it jamming.
Right. It would be bad in another world.
Right.
Which is
it would
not
be bad
world.
In which the it would be bad in the world that the keyboard was designed. I think that's some of the criticisms that we see about even business structures, specifically residential repaint. Right, and we're talking about innovating the business structure, innovating the roles, the expectations, how you interact with clients, how do you scale a business, or the incentive structures around that. It's not a bash on how things have been operating for a very long period of time. It's not a bash on that because it was very intentional and very successful in the environment that it was archetyped.
Right.
And if things didn't change, it would still be number one. Mm-hmm. But as we found, it is the constant drum of life. Conditions change. And when conditions change, the optimal operating system is likely needs to adopt, right? You're going to have a new strategy that comes out and wins not because it's better. It's just that the conditions are different.
Right. Now it's so funny that you almost have to defend progress like that because you think we get used to that, but it's not. It sounds so redundant to me to have to say like, hey, yeah, this thing that was created 100 years ago may not be fit for our time. It was great for the time in which it was, invented, but now, the Model T Ford is no longer as efficient or all these other good things as some of these modern Teslas or something like that. I don't know.
And the beauty of the T Ford was not in the T Ford, right? The beauty of the T Ford was that it was innovative to maximize the effectiveness of its current conditions, right? That's where the true beauty is.
Right.
And so you want to celebrate the Model T Ford and say, this is the conditions that it started to maximize for productivity. And you say, in the spirit of that, what are the new conditions and how do we maximize the productivity now?
That in the true spirit of not the object itself, but in the innovative mindset that created it. It was Nietzsche who said, it is my sympathy with the past that I want to see it abandoned. It's because I love it. It's because it was amazing. But we're going to move forward in the spirit that brought people to those things. But people get really attached. And that's the thing. People get really attached to what they're doing and their way of living and the people that their communities, because it becomes a communal thing. Like you said, the things that are more universal are shared by a lot of people. It becomes entrenched in just all of our conventions. And so it's not just a keyboard anymore. It's not just a computer. It's the way we do life together. It's the way we talk about things together. Yeah. I mean, matter of fact, I'm guessing if we're not careful to keep people from tuning out of this conversation, they're going to think this is, oh, that's just people rambling on. But what we're really on to is how people think and how the brain works. It's not really about keyboards. It's about what we're trying to accomplish as human beings, both in our technology like keyboards and in business and in human relationships. And unless you get that connection, you're going to kind of just say, oh, you know what, just leave it. Leave it. We don't need it. Stay with the QWERTY keyboard. You're just trying to mess with something that's old. And that's hence the defense of saying, no, we're trying to move forward. That's why we're having this conversation, because it's in all of our best interest to keep moving forward. But that's
Innovators are oftentimes trailblazers. And
trailblazers are incendiaries. They're torching the past. I'm talking about as a caricature. You know, people, we could say trailblazer in a very positive sense, but some people see them in the negative sense as being iconoclasts or incendiaries and just causing troublemakers.
But we
know that's not always the case, and it kind of depends on your perspective. But you're trying to bring about the understanding to say, hey, how can we innovate and be somebody who moves things forward while still appreciating the past and not just trying to be destructive or pessimistic or whatever.
And so, there are incentives towards innovation too.
Of course.
You know, the whole society doesn't have to get together and decide that this is the way things are going to be, because collectively we want to innovate. There will be the innovators. And I think that book, Kuhn, had written, paradigm wise, you know, you've got the conquerors and the conquered and paradigms that kind of win out over time.
Real quick about that. It was called The Structure of Scientific Revolutions, and you and I talked about this at the conference, that we were amazed both of us had read the book, because not everybody reads that book, Jason. I've not found like anyone else, literally my entire experience, that has read it. So if somebody out there has read that book, leave a comment somewhere and let us know that we're not alone. But the idea is, he believed in not just accumulating knowledge, that we're growing smarter and smarter all the time as human beings, but he believed in competitive paradigms, that it doesn't matter if you're right or wrong. It depends on if your way of looking at the world wins against another way. And that depends on the time in which you live, your environment, the people you're associating with, what truths are most convenient and helpful for where you happen to be. And sometimes that's just based upon what most people tend to be happier with, and maybe they're less fearful of it too, because as we know, some of the revolutions in science and things like that have scared people. Things like the Earth is not the center of the universe and whatnot. It's a very frightening thing. It could challenge your whole foundation for how you view yourself in the universe. So this is another thing the author said, Thomas Kuhn. He said, No one thought or belief is totally detached from everything else. It's all connected. You can't get rid of a keyboard as easily as you think. It's all interconnected to all these mass movements of ideologies and paradigms and feelings.
I'm going to start burning everybody's keyboard in this office except mine right now.
That's right. Competitive paradigms. So that's why this is so important. Let me ask you, Jason, let's take this to business and keep it in business now. Yeah. What are those things in business that you're moving beyond and leaving behind you in pursuit of those better ways to do business that might be causing trouble for some people, like leaving the QWERTY keyboards?
Yeah, this is the prep I should have done for our podcast.
Better no prep.
Yeah, so here's I'd say open book management, right? So I would say normally talking with other painting contractors, they're not very open book within their organization. It's here's the ownership, here's our books, and then here's your incentive and your comp plan, and don't worry about it. I think open book management is a phenomenal way to go. I think it's a great way to incentivize people, and it's not always intuitive. And it's one of those paradigms that we operate under.
Can I ask some questions about that real quick? I don't know if you're going to explain it, but I just want to ask some specific questions. Does everybody know what each other gets paid? What you get paid? Like what the business is getting paid? What's all involved in open book?
Open book is, I think at the core of it, Chris, is you get down, you say, we want to make a profit, and we're going to make a profit, and this company is going to be profitable. And if you want to work for a profitable company, this is a great place to be. And I guess I can only speak out of my own experience, but I think I went through that transformation saying, yeah, I was scared of profit. I felt like I was going to be greedy. My people would think I was greedy. My clients would think I was greedy. I was like, I don't need profit. I'm here to help society.
Did you really go through that though? Was that really some of your thought process?
I think I had a shyness around it. Like a guilt around it. Right.
Is it okay for me to want
to have a profitable business?
Right. And what do you think? Cause I think you're onto something there. A lot of people maybe experience that, but what causes that kind of a thing, do you think?
So what causes?
I'm asking about the typewriter jams here.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. That's deep. I would say, I think it's just taking a moment to look in the mirror and then drawing out the picture of who you want to be and say, yes, that's who I want to be. Now, until you go through that exercise, whether it's yourself individually or as a business, right? So until you draw out the picture that you want, your business to be, and say, yes, I want that, I'm going to verbalize it, and that's what I want, then you're kind of like, it's murky, it's shadowy, you're not really sure. Someone asks you a question, you kind of talk in platitudes, and it's not crystal, right? It's not focused. So I think that's that's part of it.
Do you think that a lot of you're a younger business owner and you're bringing people, especially in cooperation, you're trying to bring people along and kind of
that's a good
share,
example
you're
of,
sharing.
Of a paradigm. Okay. Cooperation.
Yeah. Okay. So there's something that you want things to be fair. You want people to benefit and you not be the only one that benefit. Do you think profit sometimes seems to fly in the face of community or that idea of, you know, all boats rise in the tide, that you're afraid that you'll be seen as, well, no wait, your boat, Jason, is definitely rising a little bit higher than everybody else's. Is that the fear, is that you can't be truly altruistic if you're in business and you had to come to terms with the fact that maybe there is no pure altruism? Or I'm just asking about that because I think a lot of people wrestle with those same things. Am I allowed to make a dollar? Am I allowed to make a buck if the other guy's making 50 cents or a quarter? Because you're bringing in people all the time. And a lot of you, again, younger business owners who care, and you're building teams that you care about, and you talk about your team like family. You do. It's becoming more prevalent. I'm hearing it all the time. Yeah. That's amazing to me. But what happens when your family's not making as much as you? So people are going to be watching, Jason, to see how are you managing those feelings and how you're justifying making a profit and being okay with that, reconciling yourself to that. And then how do you tell your business and your team, the team you call family, that you're reconciled to that idea of you making profit, even more profit than what they may be as individuals? So that's think, the real struggle. What do you think?
I think – so we had talked about people being paid not off of their efforts, but off of the types and quantities of problems that they solve on a previous podcast.
Right.
And the response is, you know, the question is often, you know, hey, I'd love to increase my comp package. Here's my goals. This is what I want to achieve. The answer is always, great. How can we do that together? Right. How does that, and you tell me how that makes sense in this business model that I'm open book about. Like, here's our targets. Here's our budgets. Can we work together and see how that works? If we can, let's ride, right? We've got some great resources here. We've got a great team. Let's do it together. If not, let's find a place for you, right? Let's look in the market. Let's connect you with somebody where it's going to be a big win. But that's something right now. I'm in the open space, and because Alex, our president, is doing comp meetings with our key employees right now, and that's a big conversation: is how much money do you want to make? What are your goals? What's your VTO? What are your 5-year goals? And then, great. How do we get there together? Right. It's not a game of cat and mouse of, you know, I'd like a $3 an hour raise. Well, maybe I'll give you a $2 an hour raise.
How about $2? I love how you said it's
not just like, and that's, I think there's a lot of that ethos of it's a cat and mouse game of who's going to bluff and who's going to push. And it's open book management is here's the conditions we're operating in. Here's our goals and our targets and the structure of a business. How can we do this together? And how can we all win?
I love how you said, like, instead of saying, don't worry about it, you're telling people, like, you're opening your books. So that sounds so funny to me because that's the stereotypical, like, the way I imagine it happening is them coming up and say, hey, can you tell me how you guys are doing and what we're all making and how successful we are? And a lot of business owners approach and their posture really communicates, and don't worry about it.
It's not going to be a win for everyone. So that is a cultural decision as a business that you make. And then you're going to attract people who fit that culture and repel people who don't fit that culture. And that's a trade-off you have to be willing to make.
That is revolutionary. This is revolutionary. So, and that's what PBN, Paint by Numbers.
So, unfortunately, paintbynumbers.com was taken. So we did can you imagine someone grabbed that? So we do, it's called pbnpartners.com.
Cool.
So pbnpartners.com is our website. And we're super pumped about this conference. It'll probably be over by the time this thing goes live.
Nope,
but
I'll get it out there. I'll get it out there. Well, let me ask you real quick. So we covered that. And I know that I'm trying to move us along just because it gets deep, man. It gets deep. It's really interesting. It's interesting to us. But I want to real quick before we leave off this thing, what other things, are there other things like the open book that you feel like are pretty revolutionary for you guys in the industry?
Man, I think – so some of the things I think are revolutionary, we try and then they fail. So a year ago, I would have told you, you know what, I think everything can be centralized into a nervous system of office admin. And you don't need any crew leads, you don't need any project managers, and you're going to scale everything digitally through a nervous system of a command center. And I think that does work to a certain revenue point. But this year, again, we just exploded again in revenue. And I think we bumped past where that's effective.
Wow.
And so now we're moving back to a project manager model who have the then assistance of a central nervous hub. So not every innovation succeeds. It's called, it's not failing, it's iterating is the kind of phrase of like, let's get that, like, do you think this will work? I'm like, let's get the iteration out there, right? That's a great hypothesis. Let's run it. Let's run the test.
And, do you think it's fair to say that what worked for you last year will not work for you this year in some
100%.
Sense? Okay.
100% for us. I mean, especially on the growth curve we've been on, it never has ever been the same. It never works again. And then we're also, I think, in a time where conditions change so frequently that it's like you better not bank on last year's model being the most effective model. And maybe you don't need to find the most effective model year after year after year. But if you've got an ethos of innovation and iterations, then you're certainly going to go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're trying to continue to see progress and push things forward, definitely you got to take those risks. But the thing is, who is the one that said, G.K. Chesterton said, you sit as many risks as you run. So really, sitting there is going to be just as problematic, you know, just hoping that the plateau won't save you. You talk about trailblazing. Yeah, sometimes it creates more of a blaze than a trail, but the idea is if you don't keep pushing things along and moving, you're going to drown. You know, I don't know.
And it's just exciting. Like residential repaint is such an exciting industry to be in. I think it is one that you can take a lot of risks. You can try a lot of things. You can recover pretty quick. And it's in a super tumultuous time of adaption and innovation. So if you've got this kind of ethos and the spirit of innovation and iteration in you, like I couldn't think of a more fun place to be other than hanging out with Elon all day than running. I think running a painting company is right up there with hanging out with Elon Musk. I think they're both a similar level of being challenged and excitement with innovating and putting out different iterations and seeing what sticks. And it's a thrilling ride.
Well, you've been called the Elon Musk of the painting industry. So I hope you live up to the name as people interact with you at your event coming up soon and at the expo. I've already mentioned how to get to the expo. How do people find out more about PBN? It's at the website, right?
Yeah, pbnpartners.com. Shoot me a message or an email through social media or whatever works well for you. You can usually find me around one way or another. That's how you do it.
Sounds good. Let me hear a couple keyboard clicks.
All right. So I'm going to get the tester back out. These ones I had never switched over. So we went with the Cherry MX Blues. The greens have a little bit more of a little less actuation force, but then the curve ramps up at the end. You can hear a little bit here. And then we talked about the Khalil Goals at the start of this. Those are tactically, those are my favorite. I probably want some dampeners on my case because they have a little bit of a ring to it. I'm a pretty aggressive typist when I really get going.
I was going to say, it sounds like there's a little bit too much ring and need to put a dampener on some of those. That's exactly the words I was coming up with.
Now, you're thinking, now that for the modifier keys, I use a Quick MX Silver. It's a linear switch. Ooh. There's no bump. There's no click.
Ooh, that's nice.
Yeah. But the Holy Pandas. I'm
Holy
so
Panda.
Excited for those to come back. You've got the housing of an Invern Panda switch combined with the stem of a Halo switch. Is by far the holy grail of key switches. Very hard to source, very hard to take apart and Frankenstein back together. And then you get the right, I forget the numbers. There's a specific type of key switch lube that you put on there, and it just is like the most crisp. I can't even, there aren't even words to describe crisp. It, Chris. But just wait.
But I like hearing your words to try to describe it. Give me a picture of some of these things. We'll put it with the post on Facebook with the podcast. And then, wow. And just to remind everybody, this guy really is genius. He's not just weird. He's genius. So.
I'm very, it's fortunate that I've been successful. Otherwise, I'd just be very quirky.
You'd be very quirky. Oh, no. All right. We've run our course on this podcast. All right, man. Hey, thanks for being on Paint Ed.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Chris.
Paint Ed podcasts are a product of the Painting Contractors Association. To find out more about upcoming education opportunities or for more information about joining PCA, visit pcapainted.org. We'll see you next time.